Hello and good evening. Welcome to another episode of Between the Presets, a podcast by me, Rudy Stettner, that comes out every Monday evening. Here is the place where anything that can be said in polite company is fair game for discussion, even if it occasionally offends. Let's roll. Hello, it is Monday evening, the ninth day of Adar 2, 5784, that being Monday, March 18th, 2024. As spring approaches, it always appears to me as a season of hope. One hears the loud chirping of returning birds coming from their southern vacation. And to me, when I see the light, almost yellowish green of the leaf buds in the trees, when I see their translucence catching the light of street lights and sometimes the bright moonlight, to me it appears to me as a theme of resurrection. Of yes, there is a cycle of dormancy, of barren branches raised in supplication almost, but yes, the leaves come back in their full splendor. It's a very special time. On a more sobering note, with seasonal changes, I've noted that trees in the city tend to have a considerably lower longevity, that because the rains are mixed with road salt, motor oil, and other chemicals, that what the trees are given to sustain themselves is not so healthy. And sometimes one can see it in the sickliness on the bark of the trees. That's rather sad. I wish there were a way around it. One news item that I found very dismaying was last week, I think it was Thursday or Friday, they announced that the delivery of the New York Times and a few other newspapers would be delayed because at 3 o'clock in the morning there were demonstrators outside the printing plant of the New York Times and other big newspapers. These demonstrators had their grievances about Israel and the Middle East, and they would not let those trucks bearing the newspapers go through, which meant that the newspapers made it very late to the newsstands the entire day. I found it particularly ironic that they blamed the New York Times, of all papers, for being pro-Israel when it is anything but. But there were two other dimensions to the problem that were very concerning to me. The most important one was that they were blocking transit. They were interfering with the free press because their so-called enlightened views had priority over any other consideration that the population could have. The second matter is roadblocks. When there is a roadblock, not only can news trucks not get through, not only can commuters not pass, but also potentially ambulances. And what was particularly aggravating here was that there were no arrests. None of these people who blocked the road with wanton indifference and antipathy to the well-being of the public, not only were none of them arrested, none of them charged, but also none of the laws against such behavior were enforced. There are plenty of political causes that I find absolutely repulsive, but I don't challenge people who believe in those causes. I don't challenge their right to demonstrate publicly. The law is essentially a statement of expectations to the public, and the law is also a promise to the public that certain standards will be adhered to. When laws are not enforced, it is a promise to the people that has been broken. And when that road was blocked at 3 a.m., a promise to the people of New York was broken by law enforcement in New York. It should not be tolerated. Of course, when you say that you're for the people, when you say that you're for some sort of righteous revolutionary cause, it seems that everything is forgiven. It shouldn't be that way. Our elected officials take an oath of office to uphold and enforce the laws of the state, of the federal government, whatever it is. So when we elect a district attorney, when we elect a governor that refuses to enforce the state's laws, they have broken faith with the people that they govern. Now, if you look at the three major television networks and the educational TV, National Public Radio, if you look at the mainstream newspapers, they are essentially asleep at the switch. Journalists have the potential of being the eyes and ears of the people, of being watchdogs, of being courageous. Historically, unfortunately, journalists have gone with the flow, promoted the regime narrative, and enforced ideological conformity upon the people. On the bright side, people are waking up. There are sectors of the broadcast media that don't go with woke narratives, that don't go with regime talking points. I think specifically of talk radio. There's also the social networking that can occur on various social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, badly flawed though they are. One of the beauties of social media is it can create a sense of community among people who want to promote their beliefs, promote their vision for society's future. That, of course, is something that some of the magnates are fearful of. Facebook, with Mark Zuckerberg, tried very hard to crack down on, particularly on conservatives, actively censored the dissemination of stories that were inimical to the liberal candidates favored by Zuckerberg. I'm not so elaborately familiar with current legalities concerning social media, but in the past, we had the mail service, and we had the telephone. And as long as one obeyed the laws, both of those services were open to people. As long as you weren't mailing drugs, deadly weapons, or indecent materials, you had free use of the postal service. And the same thing with the telephone. It couldn't be used to call people up and threaten them. It couldn't be used to plan criminal conspiracies. But other than that, you did not have operators listening in on your phone calls and cutting you off if you were expressing heretical political beliefs. I think it needs to be codified legally that media such as Facebook, Instagram, Twitter are like utilities. Means of communication for people to stay in touch with loved ones and with people of like beliefs and objectives. There should not be a situation where the Hunter Biden laptop story, which was 100% true, was censored from social media platforms. Technology has changed rapidly. We now carry effectively computers in our pockets that we mistakenly refer to as telephones when the term is vastly outdated. And we need to interpret and update our existing laws so that the God-given constitutional freedoms that we have are protected in a vastly changed technological landscape. Back in the 1930s in Nazi Germany, they had book burnings. The communists had their book burnings and censorship as well. Today, they don't have to burn books. They can simply remove them from the internet. Make it impossible to access something online. There seems to be a recurring theme in the world of human inventions in which technology comes to liberate and uplift us, and it ends up enslaving us and degrading us. In a slight change of topic, there is one beloved member of my family that has very clear-cut and firmly stated views about what should be discussed at the dinner table and what can and cannot be said in front of children. In her and her husband's home, if you stray over that red line, there's a very firm look that, no, let's change the topic. The best way I could state it without being forced to put a parental advisory label on this podcast is that at certain times, you do not go past the G rating or the PG rating, and certainly PG-13. No, you don't go there. And when I do this podcast, I am always visualizing this family who I love to visit. I visualize their children and what I can say. And it provides me with a very clear guideline as to, what's appropriate and what's not. And if I have to, I put a parental advisory on the podcast, and my bar for that is rather low by general community standards. On yet another changing note, there is a language learning platform well known called Duolingo, and I recently started study of Esperanto. I'm fascinated by it. It was invented in the latter part of the 19th century by a Jewish guy named Ludwig Zamenhof. And he felt that there should be a language that didn't belong to any one country, historically, culturally, politically, that would be neutral ground in which the nations of the world could express their thoughts, aspirations, desires, what have you. It's a super simple language. There's one verb conjugation. All nouns end in O. Plural constructions are uniform. Since the language was invented by one person, I almost look at it as a work of literature. I look at a word and I say, where did this word come from? And the word viro for man, it was clearly of Latin Romance derivation, but the word knabo, boy, is clearly of German derivation. You have the word der Knabe. The feminists would not be too happy with the language, because instead of having an independent, freestanding word for females, you have, for instance, viro, man, and you have virino, for a woman. Knabo for boy and knabino for girl. So, but the idea is that by having suffixes and prefixes, etc., that one can infer a word. Having learned the word for something masculine, one can pretty much guess correctly what the feminine form would be. I also don't like that there's the English alphabet, at least, or the alphabet of most Latin languages, has 26 symbols. That should be more than enough to express all of the sounds that might be found in European languages. Getting an Esperanto keyboard is a pain in the neck. I don't know what Ludwig Zamenhof was thinking when he invented the Esperanto alphabet. I have a treacherous time switching to my Esperanto keyboard. It's very annoying. Also, his international language is very Eurocentric. It's pretty much based on the various families of the European languages, and leaves untouched as a lexical resource the languages of Africa and Asia, and language isolates such as Basque. But it was a noble undertaking, and it's something I find entertaining to look at. And it's much easier than breaking my teeth on French pronunciation or German grammar. It's always nice being able to step outside of one's language and to challenge the assumptions embedded in the language that one speaks. One such refreshing example, I'll make it one example for the day, is the Italian word anima, l'anima, the soul. Now that's related to the word animale. It's animal. It's also related to the word in English, animate. It's a beautifully expressive word for the concept of soul, a soul. And even though my knowledge of Italian is extremely limited, those rare occasions when I can step outside of English and, standing within the ground of Italian, look at my own native language, it uplifts the consciousness. I am blessed with family members who don't share my political beliefs, don't share my religious frame of reference, and yet I remain on speaking terms with those people. The exchange of ideas with them can be glacially slow, but over time it becomes very meaningful. I wish for all of my dear listeners that they should be blessed with this life of bridges over sometimes turbulent ideological waters. We are all the product of our experiences and upbringing, and if we cannot agree with each other, we should at least understand each other, or try to do so. So it has been pleasant and enjoyable speaking with you all yet again, and I hope to join you all in another week's time. Thank you again. This wraps up another weekly episode of Between the Presets. I thank you all for the pleasure of sharing with me my weekly muse. Whatever platform you access, hitting like, subscribe, or leaving a comment is much appreciated. My email address is thewinterriders@gmail.com. thewinterriders@gmail.com. Until next week, adio, which in some African languages means born on Monday or be righteous, and closely resembles adios in Spanish.